This is Season 5 of Totally Useless Information with Nick and Roy. Listen, laugh, and learn.
This week on the show, useless food information, useless music information, and useless car information. Hell, everything's useless.
Of course. Well, that's why they call the show what they do. Plus, we'll open up the mailbag and a news from around the world. The headline, move over smell-o-vision, here comes Lick-o-vision.
Totally useless information. It's everything you never needed to know.
Welcome to episode number 18.
Your weekly sweet and savory facts of totally useless information with Nick and Roy. Come and get it!
You've all eaten Hidden Valley Ranch dressing, right? You put that on your salad?
With chicken wings, the buffalo wings.
Even better. Well, in 1954, Steve Henson, a cowboy from Nebraska, and his wife Gail purchased 120 acres of sprawling land nestled in the mountains outside of Santa Barbara, California, and they started a dude ranch. Over the years, Steve had been perfecting a salad dressing recipe which would mix up the tangy blend of buttermilk, herbs, and spices for his guests. They loved it, and the Hidden Valley Ranch dressing was born. And it wasn't long before the guests were asking Steve for jars of his dressing to take home with them. And the word spread. The bottled version of the dressing was first introduced in the 1980s. It had become a smash hit, and today, Hidden Valley has become part of everyday life. People across the country proudly dunk their chicken wings, as you mentioned, chips, fries, burgers, and pizza. It's known as HVR in some circles, have been in TV shows and movies, in fact, and fans are buying it by the keg and including ranch fountains at their weddings.
Wow. I thought Hidden Valley was just a nickname that we gave a girl in high school.
Yeah, but you found it.
The mushroom capital of the world.
Yes.
Is Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. It's in Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania produces more mushrooms than any place in the world. And Kennett Square, you can find ladies and a bunch of fun guys there.
They have a lot of fun. What's the name of the town again in Pennsylvania?
Kennett. K-E-N-N-E-T Square. I would assume that's Kennett Square.
Kennett Square. Okay. Sure, check it out. If you like mushrooms, and then you put on your pizza, that kind of mushroom.
Yeah.
Cobb or a chef salad? Now, you're a chef. Roy is an actual chef with papers. Do you have your papers? Can you see your papers?
I have my papers. Okay. Yes, I am a chef.
What is the difference between a chef salad and a Cobb salad? I'm not asking you. I'm just asking the audience.
Chef salad normally would have like meat, whereas a Cobb salad has, go on.
Yeah.
Most chef salads have a meat to it, where a Cobb salad is more vegetable oriented, I would assume, but go ahead.
So chef salad and a Cobb salad both have lettuce, cheese, meats, such as chicken and bacon, and hard-boiled eggs in some cases. Mm-hmm. The chef's salad is typically considered to be a starter to the meal, where a Cobb salad is often considered as to be a main dish.
Yeah, Cobb salads, usually you put like that wedge, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not
a big salad, you know, person.
Neither am I. Have you seen our picture? Our current picture?
We're more meat and potatoes.
That's right. Yeah.
It was a good hamburger and take that salad. You can throw some of that salad on the bun. That's okay.
And of course, top it off with a Hidden Valley Ranch dressing
on that and a couple of mushrooms from Kennett Square. Yeah. You say yam, I say sweet potato. But guess what? They're not the same. They're not even close.
Really?
They're not even in the same plant family. A yam is a monocot, having an embryonic seed from one plant, whereas a sweet potato is a dicot, meaning it has two. And by the way, the sweet potato capital of the world is Africa. They grow more sweet potatoes in Africa than anywhere. And being that a yam is a monocot, I like it better because If you've seen Angelina, she does a this and a this, and that's Mr. Manicotti's wife. Any honeymoon fans out there?
That's right. You remember that from the honeymoon. Well, when you said Manicotti, I think of Manicotti, which is, you know, a tube-like pasta.
Yeah, yams and sweet potatoes are not
the same thing. So they're not interchangeable. So if someone says sweet potatoes or yams, it's not the same thing. Stop doing that.
No. The yam is so much more starchy. But go ahead.
How about washing all that down with a chilled Coke, Coca-Cola? Mm. Coca-Cola has a very...
Diet, please.
Okay, diet. Doesn't matter.
Along with my Cobb salad.
I know that we've used a lot of brand names on the show, and believe me, we don't have a keg of Hidden Valley Ranch dressing or Coca-Cola delivered to our respective houses because of it.
Brought to you by Hidden Valley Ranch.
Coca-Cola has a very special relationship with McDonald's, and they do different things when they ship the syrup for the machines. They ship the syrup in stainless steel containers, which keeps it more fresh. The tank, along with the carbonated water, gets pre-chilled before heading into the soda machines. So anyone who's had a can of Coke or a bottle of Coke versus getting Coca-Cola from McDonald's, it does taste that much different because of the process in which I just explained.
So the guy brings a truck. The manager says, how many? He says, I got 20 tanks. And he says, well, 20 you're welcomes.
20 what?
20 tanks.
You're welcome.
Vegetarian alert. Vegetarian alert.
Yeah.
Vegetarians don't eat meat. We know that.
Right.
Okay. But I know a few vegetarians, and they've eaten Jell-O.
So what's the problem with that?
Jell-O is a dessert because they're vegetarians. They don't eat meat. They don't eat this. And they don't eat that. Cream, because cream comes from a cow. Well, guess what, folks? Gelatin is made from boiled meat, skins, bones, and cartilage, all boiled up in one nice little gelatinous package. And they throw a lot of sugar, artificial colors, and artificial sweetness and flavors into it, and you get yourself a good hunking, wiggling thing of Jell-O in front of you. You vegetarians, we're infiltrating you. We know who you are. Feeding you meat, you don't even know it. You eat your Canadian money.
Yeah, and the last episode, we talked about how Canadian currency has some meat byproducts in it. So if you're a vegetarian, you cannot consume Canadian currency. So you're telling us that gelatin, like Jell-O, has another name brand, but gelatin is skin, boiled down skin and
meat,
bones.
Skin, bones, and cartilage especially, boiled to a point of a gelatinous mess.
Delicious. Mm-hmm. That's why it jiggles so much.
They get the marrow out of the bone.
That's why it jiggles so much. It's still alive. do you have bad bananas?
It's not working the way it used to work, the banana, but that's a story for another episode.
Well, maybe you shouldn't refrigerate it. Bananas are a tropical fruit, as you may not know, and have no natural defense against the cold in their cell walls. They become ruptured by cold temperatures. That's why you should never put bananas in a fridge.
And you don't ever want to rupture your banana.
No, if you do that, you need a lot more than just gelatin. It causes the fruit's digestive enzymes to leak out of the cells, which is what causes the banana skin to turn completely black.
Let me get this straight. So you stick your bananas in gelatin?
No. You don't stick your banana in the refrigerator.
Oh, never.
Because it has no natural defense against the cold.
And painful.
Very much so.
When you put a lemon in your Coke, and again, not to push Coke. You folks getting this?
Yes.
We've infiltrated the vegetarians. Now we have infiltrated your taste for soft drinks.
There you go.
Okay. So if you put a lemon in a Coke or an iced tea or water, you'll notice something happens to the lemon. It floats to the top of the glass.
Oh, yeah, it does. Sure. Why?
The lemon floats because it has slightly less density than water, and the water is more dense. So it's technically not the lemon floating more than the water pushing it up to the top.
It went to get rid of it. Get out of here. Just go. Yes. Don't be such a sourpuss.
Yeah, man. How dare you mess with my Coke?
Don't be such a sourpuss. Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate your listenership in all of the countries around the world, including India and Israel and Kenya. Of course, all over North America, South America.
In this strange place called Canada.
Yes.
We're all over the place, Nick. What is it, 58 or 59 countries?
Almost 60 countries now, and we often say we're even in countries they don't even speak English. But then again, neither do we. You're listening to Totally Useless Information with Nick and Roy.
From Beethoven to Bieber, rock and roll to rhythm and blues, this is Totally Useless Music Information with Nick and Roy.
Do you know the oldest musical composition known is called Sekelos Epitaph?
No, I know now.
It was written on a column marking a grave in Turkey. It was a Turkish man's grave. The music score was written in notes, and then the words were written and translated. This is from the first century AD. The lyrics were translated, "While you live, shine. Have no grief at all. Life is short and time demands its due." Those are the lyrics to the first song ever composed.
Very nice.
I think that's cool.
Listen, laugh, and learn. That's our motto here at Totally Useless Information with Nick and Roy. You know, I just learned something just by listening.
Yeah, and the Greek guy was like, "What the hell is that column above my head?"
And now you're laughing. There you go.
Oh, that's but a, you see, I mean, how cool is that, guys?
That's amazing.
Sekelos Epitaph.
Now, have you ever seen a trumpet player on TV play, and it looks like they have the a bathroom plunger at the end of it?
Right.
It's intentional. The plunger mute is simply a bathroom plunger. By the way, make sure you use an unused one, like a brand new one. It's recommended. The mute is held at the performer's hand and used to cover and uncover the bell of the trumpet to create that wah-wah sound.
Mm-hmm.
Using a plunger is an excellent player can make the trumpet sound like, if he's really good enough, is what I'm trying to say in English, you can make it sound like it's talking.
Right.
Okay.
Can you imagine if the plunger had a memory and the guy was playing?
That's why you need a new one. By the way, remember the parents' voices and the teachers' voices in the Charlie Brown TV shows? It was created by a trombone with a plunger mute.
Oh, see? Double thing here, Nick.
So in case you have a trumpet or maybe not, you can buy a plunger from any hardware store. Although many professional trumpet players alter their plungers slightly, they drill holes and insert a penny in the nub at the top of the plunger to get a little bit of the extra rasp in the
sound. I'm extraordinary, so I don't use a plunger in my home. Dynamite works better. I just stick a dynamite in the toilet, slam the lid, run for my life.
Yeah, and the tidy bowl man makes a run for it. Oh, no, he's here. He's back.
People are like, "Oh, Roy must have went to that smorgasbord again." I play the guitar, and I've changed guitar strings. Now, I know you don't play, Nick, but have you ever seen guitar strings?
Yes, I have.
Okay, they're not that easy. They're annoying to change.
Well, as a matter of fact, my wife does play guitar. And and whenever she had to change the guitar strings, it was really quite a chore. So, yes, I understand.
It is. It's annoying. You have to put them on right, spin them around, cut them. You know, I mean, there's not. Okay, this guy, Thomas Silkman, he holds the world record for the most guitar strings changed in 1 hour. 226 guitar strings changed in 1 hour.
Wow.
That is insane. It takes me probably a half hour to do just the six, maybe more.
So he's like one of those, what do they call that, at the pit? Like the pit crew? Does he have like a pit crew at a racing?
Right, he works for a guitar company. Hurry up, Tom.
With no strings attached. Hey, that would be a great name for a business, for a guitar business, no strings attached.
What do you think? There you go.
There you have it.
So send your royalties to Nick and Roy.
So if I can digress for just a moment. So the last episode, we introduced a brand new topic, on the money. If you're a business out there and you have a clever name for your business, send it to us at nickandroy.com and we'll be happy to mention your business on the air. Doesn't cost you anything. Go to nickandroy.com. For example, there's a tennis store here in Toronto. It's called The Merchant of Tennis.
Ah, Merchant of Venice.
So if you have a clever name like that, send it along to nickandroy.com. Click on Contact Us, and we'll be happy to mention your business. Another one that I saw, which actually was on Jake Linsky, our friend Jake Linsky from high school. Hello, Jay, from Christopher Columbus High School. He sent this meme on Facebook, and it's a furniture store, and the name of it is The Shack of Sit.
The Shack of Sit.
The Shack of Sit is the furniture store. So if you have a clever business name, send it to us, nickandroy.com. Okay, the Beastie Boys. You've heard of the Beastie Boys.
It's Christmas time in Hollis, Queens. No, that wasn't.
No, but that was Run DMC.
Run DMC.
Okay. You get your rapper people ready, you know, in order. Come on.
Tricky.
The Beastie Boys, their name is an abbreviation. Boys really? Entering anarchistic states towards internal excellence. So Beastie is what it's spelled. So B-E-A-S-T-I-E is boys entering anarchistic states towards internal excellence.
Oh, cool. That's what they said after they became famous.
Yeah, of course they did. Sure.
Three Jewish white rappers from Brooklyn. I mean, that's got to get you to listen.
Yeah, they were pickle rappers.
It's tricky, this potato salad. The schmear is tricky.
It's the tricky schmear song.
I got to buy some locks. They are okay. Tricky.
Come on, before we get us thrown off the air and thrown out of a courtroom. Come on.
There are only 8 notes in music. Uh-huh. Do, re, mi, la, sol, la, ti. You know, I mean.
Do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. Yeah, I watch The Sound of Music, yes.
So you understand it's do, re, mi,
fa, sol, la, ti, do, yeah.
Fa, sol, la, ti, right. Okay, I can't.
Doe a deer, a female deer. When you start at the very beginning, it's a very good place to start, okay?
Exactly. So you know that, but did you know that when there's 8 notes, you just said do, re,
mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. Yeah.
Ah, it's not. The first one is do. This last one, the 8th note, is an octave. So there's really only 7 notes. The 8th is the repeat at a higher octave.
Oh.
So they used the first 7 letters of the alphabet to recognize the notes. A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Then there's no more. There's no 8th. It is another octave.
Wow. Oh, there you go. So even if you're not musically inclined, we just gave you a music lesson.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, right?
I love it. Now, maybe you can rearrange those notes to sing Happy Birthday to You. Now, we talked about the Happy Birthday song many times on the show. And once again, if you'd like to send a very special birthday message to a loved one, go to our website, nickandroy.com/birthdays, and we will more than happy to send a wonderful special message for your loved one.
You get me and Nick doing totally useless information about the day that person was born. In a whole type of show format, emailed to them on their birthday by 2 famous dudes like me and Nick.
That's all. So nickandroy.com/birthdays. Happy Birthday to You, known as Happy Birthday, of course, is the most recognized song in English, according to the Guinness Book of World Records. However, there is an unknown fact related to the song's name. It was initially planned to be Good Morning to You.
Oh.
So think of the melody of Happy Birthday to You, but it's Good Morning to You. That was initially planned to be that. And then it became the birthday song.
You'd say Good Morning to You, Good Morning to You.
Don't
good
sing
morning,
it.
Good Morning, Yoo-hoo.
No, you drink Yoo-hoo in the morning. There you go. Boy, this show is so product.
This show is filled with product placement. Brought to you by Yoo-hoo. All right. The London Symphony Orchestra.
Yes.
Till this day, the London Symphony Orchestra is one of the most famous, amazing symphony orchestras. Mm-hmm. Did you know that years ago, they had a date to travel to do a show in New York, in the United States. So they had to leave from London to go to the United States.
Right.
It's a big orchestra with big instruments. So they had to book passage on a ship. They had to switch the ship they originally booked passage with because of the time delays that they needed to get to New York quicker. So they booked a different ship. The first ship that they had originally booked and were supposed to go on was called the Titanic.
Ah.
Wow. Talk about the day the music died. Could you imagine if the London Symphony Orchestra had gone down with the ship? That would have been even, you know, I mean, talking about at that time, the London Symphony Orchestra was so famous too.
Sure. So. Wow. That's amazing. That's pretty cool. I like that one too. I mean, it was, you know, not a good outcome for the Titanic.
Every once in a show, I come up with some good ones.
Yeah, sure. After 100 plus episodes, we figured to, you know, to find one every once in a while. We all know Guns N' Roses, Axl Rose.
Yes.
Axl Rose is an anagram. Okay. It can be a rearranged to spell oral sex.
No.
No stranger to juvenile antics and childish episodes. Ask anyone who's ever gone home early from after he abandoned one of his gigs, by the way. Anyway, that's another story. In the early 80s, the singer decided William Bruce Bailey didn't have enough spunk to it. I guess that's his name. William Bruce Bailey.
William Bruce Bailey? Bill Bailey?
A mashup of his biological father's surname and the name of his band at the time, AXL. William legally changed his name to W. Axl Rose in 1986. And the rest is rock history.
Wow. So his name, could you imagine his family called him Beetle? Beetle Bailey.
Beetle Bailey, yes.
Wow. That's crazy.
It is. So you're listening to Totally Useless Information with Nick and Roy.
This is Totally Useless Vehicle Information with Nick, Meet-Me, and Roy. Vroom, vroom.
Someone asked me, why does the lady say beep meep for me and vroom vroom for you?
It's got to do with that whole banana thing. I never stick my banana in the refrigerator before I'm going to use it.
Now, have you ever been involved in any car accidents in your lifetime?
I have, yes. I was hit by a car. I was rear-ended, so to speak.
that's another
by a
time.
Greek. By a Greek.
His name was George, and he didn't charge anything for it. No charge
for the hit.
Traffic safety research indicates that only 40% of drivers involved in a crash applied the brakes. 40% of the drivers involved in a crash applied the brakes. The majority don't even get their foot on the brake pedal. Failing to identify the situation in time to take evasive action, either because of a distraction or not looking far enough ahead. Mercedes-Benz, by the way, about a decade ago developed the system that prepared the braking system for emergency stops. Not only would they warn the driver of an imminent crash, they're capable of applying the brakes and bringing the vehicle to a stop without any driver involvement whatsoever.
I know, it's amazing. In fact, these computers are getting so many new things added to them that the computers are getting distracted and the cars are getting in accidents again.
That's right. Blame it on the computer. Blame it on my Commodore 64.
I don't know. I didn't think I had to stop. The computer was supposed to do it for me. Could you imagine?
Stupid computer.
So many cars and so little time for oil changes. How many oil changes you think are done in a year, approximately, Nick?
You mean in total of all the cars in the world?
In the world, yeah.
I don't know.
I have the number. I have the number.
You have the number?
I see smoke coming out of your headphones.
Yeah, you know how I am about thinking with numbers.
900 million oil changes a year. Now you know why Jiffy Lube was a good business.
There's another name brand.
But then I said to myself, what's going to happen to Jiffy Lube with all these electric cars?
Ooh. That's a good question. Well, they'll have to go into lube other things.
That's what
I guess, right?
They're going to call me up and be like, hey, listen, you need that banana lubed?
Yeah, but don't put it in the fridge.
All right, I'll be there in a jiffy.
What do you buy Jiffy Lube?
So here's I'll ask you another personal question. Have you ever run out of gas?
No.
Okay. Me neither. It was close. And you know
in
what
the boat I did in my boat.
I remember. I was on that boat. Remember?
That's one time I ever ran out of gas.
So most cars, right? They have, you know, the gauge, right? Whether it's electronic or analog. And the red light comes on, you know, and it tells you low on fuel. Right. And you're thinking, okay, there's always a little bit of a buffer. It's not exactly at empty.
Right.
How much of a buffer zone do we have? Well, most cars can drive another 60 miles before they actually hit empty.
They think you're really stupid.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. U.S. cars have the largest buffer of any vehicles.
You know what my wife does to me that drives me up a wall?
Yeah.
She'll call me up and go, I didn't have time. I'm rushing to work. I didn't have time to stop for gas. I'm like, well, how much gas do you have? Well, the light just went on. And I'm like, well, get gas. And she's like, I don't have time. I'm going to see if I make it. She does it like it's a game.
Yeah. Well, those of you who are Seinfeld fans, it was an episode where Kramer goes on a test drive. And they're going and driving and driving, and then, you know, the light comes on, and the car dealer is just like, the car salesman is just sweating, and they want to go as far as they can go, and it eventually does wind up, I think if I remember correctly, winds up running out of gas, and then Kramer says, I don't like the car, and gets out of the car. But anyway, so yeah, so on average, it's about 60 plus miles, but you know, as soon as the light comes on, first of all, some mechanics say you should never ever have less than a quarter of a tank because of all the stuff that comes to the bottom and all the sediments and all that kind of stuff that happens to be in the gasoline. But right. As a matter of reference, 60 plus miles in most cars have that buffer zone.
There you go. How many parts do you think the average car is made of? How many parts? Right? You say to yourself, like, there's got to be a lot of parts. But did you know that on average, there's approximately 30,000 parts
30,
in
000.
One car? 30,000 parts in one car. And somebody had to make those parts. So then you wonder why there's so many, you know, companies, you know.
Yeah. Okay, I get it.
Yes.
So your car has 30,000 pieces, the 30,000 parts. It needs to be made by a machine or many machines. Those machines need machines to make that machine to make those parts. How far back do you go?
And all of those machines need one union worker.
And lots of lube
to be sitting there on a lounge chair drunk.
No, we love union people. We love them all the time.
We just joke around with them.
95% of a car's lifetime is spent parked.
I saw that. I was going to use that.
This is interesting. So if you drive a car, 95% of your car's lifetime is spent parked. In some of the larger cities, it drops to about 92% because of increased traffic and extended commuting time. But even if you count only the daytime, by subtracting 8 hours of sleep from the total car's lifetime, the average parking time is still 93%.
Wait a second. So when I go to sell my used car, if it's like 3 years old, I'll say I really only used it for like 55 days.
Exactly. You do the math. See? There you go.
The whole rest of the time it was on its own.
100%.
Do you think when you close the doors, like when a tree falls in the woods, do you think when you slam the doors of your car, it listens to the radio?
It might.
The first road trip. No, not National Lampoon's Vacation.
You're right.
Yeah. I'm talking about the first road trip in 1888.
Yes.
Bertha Benz, and yes, that's her name, Bertha Benz.
All right.
Yes, Bertha Benz, whose husband was Carl Benz of the famous Mercedes-Benz, you know, car.
Yeah.
Carl Benz, he invented the first practical car, the first legitimate practical car. Was invented by Carl Benz. We think of Ford, and that's not the case. Carl Benz really invented the car.
Oh, okay.
Well, Bertha took one of his inventions on the first road trip in 1888. She took herself and her two sons from Mannheim, Germany to Furesem, Germany, 66 miles. It took 7 hours. And guess what? There were no rest stops because cars hadn't really been invented yet. Yes. So the kids were probably like, I'm going to go in the bathroom. But they said, Einstein. No, okay. But listen, my grandmother was born in her hometown was Mannheim, Germany.
There you go. I know I heard the name before, so now it makes sense
right,
to me.
Yeah. So she could have, in all rights, known Bertha Benz or one of the two kids, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe she was messing around with one of the two kids.
Uh-oh.
You never know.
So then you'd be a descendant of Mercedes Benz.
I'm going to go get my car right now. I got a convertible. I got a convertible in mind.
With all 30,000 parts. The Rolls Royce.
Oh, I think AMG for the Mercedes stands for all made by my grandma.
I met your grandmother. She was a sweet, sweet lady. God rest her. God rest her soul.
Best. The best, Nick.
Rolls Royce made a car, the Ghost.
Yes.
And when they made the car, they made the interior completely soundproof. They added 220 pounds of soundproofing material. And you're thinking, that's awesome. That's amazing. But during the early part of the testing, the acoustics team discovered that while removing all of the noise coming into the interior, well, that was the intended goal, it had its drawbacks because the people who were testing them were so disoriented. Because usually you're so used to hearing car noise and whatnot, this was completely soundproof. And the drivers said that it was like sitting in a vacuum. So the engineers, being the smart geeks that they are, tweaked it by harmonizing the background noise in the car and added seat frames that vibrated at specific frequencies.
Why? Just take some of that stuff.
Well, that's the thing, right? So the engineers are like, this is what we're going to do. We're going to keep the soundproofing in, but we're just going to harmonize the some of the noises, and then we're going to add some seat frames. They're going to vibrate, add only a specific vibration. Yeah. After going
through... You know, my wife's car has dual-paned windows. Okay. She has my wife has a Maserati Ghibli.
Okay.
Has dual paned windows. They're actually almost bulletproof on the side windows, so that the car is so quiet inside, there's no noise. No noise comes through the window. There's literally two pieces of glass. I'd hate to know what it costs to replace it, but
yeah exactly.
Then again, I hate that I bought the car.
But why would you, okay, I understand you want a quiet ride, but it's too quiet where it throws you off. That's distracted driving. It's just too quiet. Speaking of quiet, you can go to our website and visit there, and like we always tell you, you can visit, you can download and listen to all of the episodes from our full library of 5+ seasons now of Totally Useless Information with Nick and Roy. And you can send us an email.
Every day Toyota manufactures 13,000 vehicles come off their line. 13,000 vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
How many do you think Ferrari makes?
A lot more.
14.
A lot less. Wow.
Toyota does 13,000 cars a day. Ferrari makes 14, and that's a good day. That's when the Italians decided not to go on strike. I was in Sicily and they said, they were marching down the street. They said, those are the guys that work at the factory. They're on strike. I said, that's terrible. He says, happens once a week.
So they had several hundred orders of the Ferrari, but they only made 14 because they went on strike.
Well, can you imagine, though? 14 cars, that's it. That's why they're $250,000.
I guess so. Crazy. Well, listen, speaking of priceless, you go to our website, nickandroy.com, and you can download a full library of episodes from over 100 episodes, and we thank you for that. And also, you can send us an email at nickandroy.com.
What's in the mail, babe? What's in the mail?
So I love going through the mailbag. I really do, because we get such interesting people writing us. Mm-hmm. So go on our website, please, because make it pithy and fun, because we'll put you on the show. Patty from Costa Rica, she says, I'm an expat from the U.S., which is what they call themselves when they move to other countries, expats. Did you know that?
Expatriates, I think is what it stands for.
Yeah, something like that. They're called expats.
Right.
And she says she just loves our show. It makes her feel at home. Listening teaches her something every episode. She learns something and laughs her head off. You'll know Patty from Costa Rica. She's the one with a great body and a neck.
And no head.
No, but she says Costa Rica, she says, I miss my home, but Costa Rica is perfect like you guys.
Wow.
So clearly it's a come on. We're both married, Patty. Okay. I think we say it like 20 times a show.
Yeah.
Only because our wives know how to shoot. They go to the gun range.
Yeah. And they also keep telling us that they remind us we're married. Yes.
But clearly Patty could go online and see our pictures. So there's clearly no really good looking available men in Costa Rica.
Right. By the way, Patty, her name was Patty.
Yes.
The International Dateline is not another dating site, just so that you know.
No, yes. She has a brother named Beef Patty.
Wow. Pierre, my mailbag today, Pierre from Montreal here in Canada writes, Dear Nick and Roy, we discovered your show on our radio station we like to listen to, which happens to be CJAD 800 in Montreal. So yeah, go Montreal. So those of you who don't know, some of you or most of you are listening to us on whatever podcast platform you download us on, and we appreciate that. But we're also on 5 different radio markets in Canada, and Montreal being one of them. So it's Toronto, Montreal, Windsor, London, and St. Catharines. And so yeah, we thank you. So Pierre listens in Montreal. We love listening to you both. You're quite entertaining. I hope to see you one day at the Just for Laughs Festival. Now that's a huge comedy festival, Just for Laughs. Like, comedians come from all over the world, so that's quite a compliment. So, yes, maybe one day you'll see us at the Just for Laughs Festival. Anyway, here's my question. They say that laughter is the best medicine. Yes, we've heard that. Mm-hmm. Does laughing burn calories too? So, Pierre from Montreal, oui is the answer. Oui? Yes. Mm-hmm. Just 10 to 15 minutes of laughing a day can burn up to 40 calories. According to the Vanderbilt University study, researchers determined that the increase in heart rate and oxygen consumption during these funny moments boosted the burn. So 10 to 15 minutes of laughing. Our episodes are roughly 25 to 30 minutes.
Yeah.
25 minutes. So you're burning about 78 calories on our show.
Right. So send your $2 a month gym membership to nickandroy.com. And by the way, to that guy in Montreal, Nick and I will be going to the comedy festival this year. We'll be the two people in the parking lot without tickets.
Parking your car. All 30,000 parts of them.
Will be the valet. That's French.
It is. It sure is. So once again, you go to our website, which is, what's our website? Yes, it's nickandroy.com.
And now for something completely useless.
In 1939, 835 sheep in the United States were killed by a single lightning strike.
How many?
835 sheep in the United States were killed by a single lightning strike in 1939.
Wow. How the hell did that happen?
I don't know. But when I read that, it reminded me of the Johnny Carson bit that he did. He was Carnac the Magnificent, where he would they would give him like a card, an envelope with a card in it. And I can't play it because we don't have the rights to play it. But here's what the question was. What is sis boom ba? Sis boom ba. The sound you hear before the sheep explodes. I mean, it's kind of funny, but it's the audience's reaction.
800 and something from one
835 in 1939. So
that is a hell of a Greek shish kebab.
It's a lamb kebab, yes. It's lamb souvlaki.
They said to me, would you like a lamb souvlaki? And I said, nah.
Yes. You were quite sheepish when they asked you that, though.
Okay, I have a very quick one.
Yes.
That most people are going to want to write this down because they're going to repeat this to somebody.
Yes.
Most car horns honk in the key of F.
No.
Almost all of them. Honk, honk. That's F.
F you.
Unless you got like an Italian car which goes ink.
Yes.
Then I mean, really, honestly. Then you have this $250,000 car and it goes ink.
Hey,
actually, it should be like, get out of my way.
Hey, yo, Pazzo, what are you doing out of the way? They should have horns like that.
Ah, fagiola.
Anyway, today on the show, we talked about cars. We talked about food, which has been, it's been a while. And we also talked about music. It's time for the beloved segment you love, Time for the News.
And now, from around the corner and around the world, this is TUI News.
Well, move over smell-o-vision, here comes lick-o-vision or something. A Japanese professor has developed a prototype lickable TV screen.
No, no.
That can imitate food flavors. It's another step towards creating a multi-sensory viewing experience.
Why would you want to do that?
It's called taste.
First off, remember when we were kids and they'd, like your parents would say, don't sit so close to the TV screen, you'll get brain cancer.
Yeah.
Now they want you to lick the screen.
It's called Taste the TV or TTTV.
Oh, wait a minute. You just put my mind in a different place. This gives new meaning to pornographic television.
It uses a carousel decorum, and a carousel of 10 flavor canisters that spray combination to create the taste of a particular food. The flavor sample then rolls on hygienic film over a flat screen TV for the viewer to try.
It's a safe screen.
It is. It's a safety screen. In this COVID-19 era, the kind of technology can enhance the way people can connect and interact with the outside world.
Yeah, isn't that great? Gee, I feel like having one of those frozen bananas.
The goal is to make it possible for people to have the experience of something like eating at a restaurant and across the other side of the world. While you're in the comfort of your own home, right? So you could have, let's say, for example, you can taste something from a wonderful restaurant in Italy while sitting in your home just by licking
your
teeth.
How the hell is that going to happen?
So
Number one, if I have to go to Italy to get a good Italian meal, how are they going to duplicate it on my TV screen?
Well, they're working on it because, as a matter of fact, I'm glad you asked that. See, you asked the right questions.
Penthouse TV is going to make a fortune. It will. I'm subscribing now.
So with a team of about 30 students that produced a variety of flavor-related devices, including...
What's your flavor called? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
As part of the experiment, as part of the study, they include a fork that makes food taste richer. He said that one of the professors said that they built a TTTV prototype over the past year and made a commercial version.
The fork makes things taste richer.
That's right. So it has all kinds of other devices.
Wow. I'm back to the screen already.
All right. So the TTTV prototype was built over the past year and made a commercial version that cost about 100,000 yen or $875 to make.
$875.
Right.
In order to taste your TV.
That's right.
So if they come on and they say, oh, these Fruit Loops taste like fruit flavors, and you lick your television, you're going to taste the fruit flavors.
Brought to you by
Fruit Loops.
Fruit Loops.
But as you mentioned on an earlier episode, like almost in season one, all of the colors on the Fruit Loops,
they taste the same.
They're
right?
All the same flavor.
No, screw
different
that.
Colors. They screw.
Now they're going to mess with our TVs.
That's right. There you go. Now they also they want to potential applications include distance learning for sommeliers and cooks. You can taste chocolate.
You can taste chocolate.
Yep. It's kind of like milk chocolate. It's sweet like a chocolate sauce because they tried. Here's what happened. So they told in the demonstration, they had this TTTV for reporters telling the screen that she wanted to taste sweet chocolate. After a few tries, an automated voice repeated the order and flavor jets spritzed out a sample onto a plastic sheet. And she tasted the chocolate.
Okay, so this might be good for people like diabetics that can't actually have chocolate.
Right. There you go.
So they can watch a pornographic film and then get a chocolate bar at the same time.
They've been talking to a lot of companies. They even use spray technology for applications like a device that can apply a pizza or like we said, chocolate taste, or a slice of toasted bread.
This is crazy.
It is.
So I don't like this.
But you can lick the TV, and then
what's going to happen when they're watching us, let's say, on
YouTube? Don't lick the screen. That's all the time that we have for this episode.
That's the worst flavor I've ever tasted in my life.
What was the joke about the cannibal who ate the clown and said, does this clown taste funny to you? That's all the time we have for this episode of Totally Useless Information with Nick and Roy. We thank you very much for listening and your loyalty. We really appreciate it. We will do our part and scour the internet among other sources and get you all kinds of new useless information for the next time.
And it may seem as though me and Nick enjoy talking to each other, but we'd much rather talk to you. So please tell a friend about the trend.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Roy.
Thanks for listening.
Totally Useless Information with Nick and Roy is a production of nickandroy.com. Visit nickandroy.com to access the full library of episodes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.